CliffCentral.com.
Indeed. And thank you very much, Yaku. He will also be back in the new year with more episodes of Catalytic. And if you'd like to know more, you can find out all of that on CliffCentral.com. So we launched a new show a couple of days ago called Democracy 101 in the lead up to our elections. It's kind of an important part of what we want to do going into the new year, because I think that these elections, it's not just my opinion, it's a lot of people's opinion, these elections are going to be probably the most important ones since 1994. And many people have the opinion that these could be the ones, these could be the decisions, these elections could bring about the decisions that will really change the course of direction for South Africa. Certainly, I hope so. The course of direction for us in the last couple of years has been decidedly downward. And today we're going to be joined by someone who can hopefully shed some light. He certainly has been one of those people who has added enormous value when we've had him on the Burning Platform before. But in Democracy 101 for today, we're going to speak to Wayne Sussman, who's an independent election analyst. We thought we'd pick his brain a little bit today. There's so much to talk about. So Wayne, first of all, welcome and nice to see you.
Thank you. Good morning, Gareth. Good morning, Bantubonke.
Do you agree, by the way, that the upcoming elections here in South Africa are going to be pivotal, decisive, all of those words that the analysts like to throw around? Or are we just going into another election cycle where we can expect more of the same? I certainly get the feeling that on the street and when I have conversations with people and looking at the comments on this show, people are enthusiastic about these elections in a way that they haven't been for the last few.
100%. I definitely think this is the most pivotal elections in South Africa since 1994. The length of the ballot paper speaks volumes. You've got many new entrants running this time who believe they can shape up this elections. Some of them, by the way, I think are running because they've seen what parties with one or two seats can do in our metros. So I'm not saying everyone's running for favorable reasons. But Gareth, I think it's going to be an absolutely pivotal election. And it's the first election in since our democracy where the ANC is under real threat in our three most urban provinces and also on our national ballot.
So, Wayne, let's just talk about something that happened this week. We know that Jacob Zuma has launched, or rather has thrown his support behind a party that we didn't even know existed up to a couple of days ago called the Mkhonto we Sizwe Party. We know Mkhonto we Sizwe was the ANC's armed wing during the struggle. I don't know who's in charge of this party. I don't know who the main players are. But Duduzile Zuma, who's his daughter, came out and said, no, the former president is not going to support the ANC, nor will he campaign for them ahead of these elections. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because it's been a very muted response in the media generally. And I do think that the ANC are probably more worried than they're letting on about this.
Correct, Gareth. And also we've seen the formation of Roger Jardine's party. I think middle of December, there's so much happening. I wonder if it's the best time to launch a political party, especially when the elections are bound to be, we're hearing, May next year. Running an election, particularly in South Africa, it's a large country, rural settings, urban settings, nine provinces, many different languages. It's a complicated thing to get a party going. By the way, we heard some months ago that this MK party was registered to the IEC, and that's why it's important to monitor these things. And I was wondering, and I was obviously proven wrong, that is this some kind of red herring? Why is there this MK party being formed? Will Jacob Zuma really go along with it? Well, he has gone along with it. Look, Jacob Zuma is older today, certainly, than he was in 2009, where he captured the hearts and minds of many voters, particularly those in KwaZulu-Natal. And he's older today than he was when he ran for his second term in 2014. Will he have the energy? Does he still have the relevance? This is a question not just for Jacob Zuma, but also someone for Ace Magashule. These are veterans in our political stage. Do they have the energy? Do they have that ability to connect with first-time voters? One thing about Jacob Zuma, and I always say this in politics, is focus is absolutely critical. It's absolutely vital that when I hear a new party say we're going to go after every town and township and informal settlement in South Africa, we're going to win the votes in Bizana in the Eastern Cape to Boksburg and Ekurhuleni, not the answer I typically like to hear. I like to hear parties who are focused, because I think then they have a clear game plan. If Jacob Zuma is going to be very focused in KwaZulu-Natal, I do think, and the MK party, I do think they can let on better. If they have a proper strategy, then possibly they can not just hurt the ANC, by the way, but also a party which is at a largely great 2023, the IFP as well.
Yes.
I want to play a little clip quickly. This is something that Ryan found yesterday. Thabo Mbeki had some things to say about why he won't be campaigning for the ANC, and I thought this is quite hard-hitting. First of all, I haven't seen Thabo Mbeki speak for some time, and he's certainly, you mentioned Jacob Zuma being older. Thabo Mbeki is really in his twilight years now, and the fact that he's being brought out and that he feels the need to speak out about the state of the ANC is telling in itself. But listen to these words, and then I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, and yours, Bakabantu, because I think that this is a probably a very scary proposition for the ANC to deal with. Two former presidents, Jacob Zuma, who we've discussed, and now Thabo Mbeki, saying things that they probably don't want stalwarts and leaders and elders like these two saying. Take a listen to this.
I don't think the ANC understands that reality. It is true that you have got many greedy people, many corrupt people. If I ask the question, why is the ANC, which marginalized people, as we were saying, why is it behaving like this? I say to the ANC comrades that when you say I must go campaigning next year, to say to people, vote ANC. How am I going to do that? To say vote ANC, when I know very well that the branch of the ANC in this constituency is led by a criminal. It's not possible to go and say vote ANC for a criminal.
So obviously he's not talking just about that one municipality or that one place, but he says greedy, criminals. These are things that you could not say this stuff a couple of years ago, right?
Correct. And again, Thabo Mbeki, you could see in that video, is also no longer a spring chicken. Let me just put it out there. So yeah. This is the juxtaposition, Gareth and Bakabantu. Basically, what we are seeing is, let's go back a few days ago to Mavuso Msimang. I thought that this would be a consequential decision. He has an ANC luminary, a person whose blood is black, green, and yellow, who said that he could no longer support the ANC. A few days later, he walks back that statement and rejoins the ANC. Also, what was telling for me was the launch of Roger Jardine's party. And again,
if you don't mind, on Mavuso Msimang, I mean, clearly then his credibility is shot after that, because he's been pressured to say, oh, no, I didn't mean that. But no one believes him now, right?
Yeah, his credibility is shot, but there's an old adage that it's very cold outside the ANC. You see we've seen a number of politicians, of elected, of members of parliament, councillors, leave the DA over the last few years. Yeah, you have someone who isn't even a current office holder. Of course, he's benefited from his association with the ANC and his links to the ANC. But my understanding, there's no current benefit to being linked to the ANC, who after a few days, yes, his credibility is shot. But at the end of the day, it just shows that it's much harder to leave the ANC than any other political party. I mean, besides for Malema, I'm battling to think of anyone else who's done successfully over the last few years. And this is going to be the challenge for Zuma, with regards to Thabo Mbeki's speech. This isn't the first time he's done this. I think in 2016, there was that backhanded compliment of an endorsement of the ANC. I don't know, or it was 2021. It was a very feeble endorsement. But ultimately, it's even though I think they're emerging in a place in our society, you just showed a video of Thabo Mbeki. Think back to those elections in 2004. The ANC was the dominant actor in society, whether it was business, civil society, sport, arts and culture. Just think of musicians who were endorsing an opposition party in 2004, 2009. Very few and far between. Media, every facet of society in 2004, 2009, the ANC, particularly 2004, the ANC is utterly dominant. That started to fray over the last few years. That's what makes this election very, very interesting. But I wonder, just back to the point, is whether Thabo Mbeki will say this just before the elections, what we just saw in the video.
I mean, he said it. So why does it matter if he reiterates it before the elections? Are we so stupid in South Africa that we forget these things after politicians have said them? And why is it suddenly fashionable now to talk about how bad the ANC is? But they've been bad for the last couple of years and nobody said anything until very recently. Does it take a certain level of dissatisfaction for people to have the scales pulled from their eyes?
I think it does, Gareth. I think to a certain
degree.
Go ahead, Bakubantu.
No, I think it does.
Bakubantu.
It does take a certain level of dissatisfaction. And I think we've all reached that point where even like when you spoke to credibility or from someone like Msimang, where he can't justify it anymore, where his credibility is shot because he went back with the begging bowl probably. But like someone like Thabo Mbeki, where you have been asked, how can you let this go? Where the ANC does also like invoke what's the narrative? This is the ANC of Mandela. This is the ANC of Thabo Mbeki. This is the ANC of yesteryear. But now they are still here and they have to say, no, I do not endorse this. Otherwise, it's their name.
Hmm. Yeah, Wayne, do you want to add to that?
Sure. Thanks, Bakubantu. Basically, I think this is exactly why, and I want to laud you for having this Democracy 101 session. This, and we said this at the beginning, 2021, and I know we don't often lend too much weight to local government elections, our midterms. We saw for the first time in a democratic election in South Africa, the ANC fall below 50% when all the votes were tallied. Not just below 50%, but 46%. To be honest, relatively well below 50%. That is why, Gareth, I think we are seeing the ANC fray. We're going to see more, again, the artists. I think back to this in 2004, 1999. You wouldn't see a prominent artist play at the concert of another political party. You're going to see that more and more. And that might be a metaphor of how the ANC is losing its grip. But again, Gareth, as I said on the Burning Platform, when I had the privilege of sitting in that show, I think it was about a year or two years ago, do not count the ANC out. I think there are large swaths of this country, particularly rural areas, who believe the ANC can and will do a better job than the EFF or any other political party.
Okay, so let's talk about the EFF for a second. You brought them up. People try their best to avoid the EFF, but they're a powerful player in South Africa because they're the third biggest party, but they're also often the kingmaker in regional and local elections. I mean, they don't directly run or govern any single municipality in the country, but they have tremendous influence. And Julius Malema makes a lot more noise than any other politician by weight class in this country. And then he seems to get way more attention from the media as well. So we can't ignore them, even though people say, well, they're not a major player. They don't really have policies that are noteworthy. What is your take on the EFF and whether or not people should be either paranoid or at least concerned about what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing in these opinion polls, the EFF's votes, some polls I think have them about 10%, 11%, others have them all the way up to 19%, running the DA close, even some scenarios that they eclipse the DA. That would be a stunning turn of events if they had to emerge as the official opposition. Look, the interesting thing, Gareth, is that Julius Malema, after Kenneth Meshwe, Monsieur Lakota, even if he runs again, and Bantu Holomisa, who I'll blame myself, but he was a reason why I butchered Baka Bantu's name at the beginning as I was thinking of him, Bantu Bonkwe Holomisa. These are the longest running party leaders in parliament. So Julius Malema is a veteran. This will be his third election. Leading the EFF into an election, far more experience than the IFP leader, Cyril Ramaphosa, in that regard of leading a party into parliament. So what was interesting, what should be worrying the EFF is that if you look at their growth trajectory, is that a lot of that growth in 2019 and 2021 was in the province we've been speaking a lot about in this interview, and that's KwaZulu-Natal. And by the way, Jacob Zuma's MK party could even be taking away votes from the EFF in KwaZulu-Natal. So let's see. The other thing, Gareth, if you look at the EFF's results in 2021, in places like Rustenburg and Polokwane, which are key parts of the origin story of the EFF, Polokwane is where Julius Malema hails from, the Sashego township. Rustenburg is right next to Marikana. The EFF went backwards in these two municipalities in 2021. And in the three major urban centers of Gauteng, their vote either plateaus or goes backwards. So where's the EFF growing? The EFF is growing, and this is a strange anomaly in 2023. They have won wards, and this is a very good stat for them. They've won wards off the ANC since the 2021 local government elections. It's five out of the nine provinces. It's the Western Cape, the Northern Cape, the Northwest, the Free State, and Gauteng, and Mpumalanga, six of the provinces. They've just got to do Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Eastern Cape. Easier said than done. So that shows that the EFF can beat the ANC in many parts of the country. But where they're really growing, Gareth, and again, I've just them to worry about how they're doing in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal and Polokwane and Rustenburg. They're growing in small towns in South Africa. Now, that's hopeful. That means that they're going to 2024 knowing that they are growing in certain parts of the country. The challenge is I would much rather be growing in metro areas and in large towns and small cities than in small towns. So that's where the EFF is from an electoral perspective as we end this year.
What is happening in metros? Because we're seeing these coalition governments, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. What do you suspect? And again, a lot of this is asking you to, you know, look into a crystal ball. And you're not Nostradamus, but it's certainly a more educated guess than most of us would have. What do you think is going to happen in the major metros, particularly Johannesburg, Tshwane, Port Elizabeth? Cape Town, I think, is pretty much a done deal, and the DA, if they continue to run it properly, don't face any credible or serious threats in Cape Town. But are there others like eThekwini, Durban, that may surprise us, or are these also going to be predictable results?
Yeah, so why are we talking about metros is because there's obviously large reservoirs of votes there. They're going to be consequential in this election. Are we going to see this urban-rural split continue? So when it comes to Gauteng, which has three metros, Johannesburg, Ekurhuleni, and Tshwane, what's been an interesting feature, Gareth, of our politics in 2022 and 2023 is that at present, and I always say political parties can turn things around if they work hard and change the trajectory, the ANC is in trouble with black voters in Gauteng. This is clear from by-elections in Soweto, by-elections in the West Rand, places like the Reeds in Centurion, where there's quite a number of black voters, small pockets of Randburg. in I think all but one by-election in Gauteng, the ANC share amongst black voters has continued to decline. And I think this is one of the big worries for the ANC going into the 2024 and election year. With regards to Cape Town, look, Mayor Jordan Lewis has built a very big profile, I think is a very popular mayor, but there are a few challenges for the DA. Can they hold, so the Patriotic Alliance, I think, would be their main concern going to this election. Gayton McKenzie is it's very hard to gauge how far he can go. I've got no doubt that he can do well in rural areas, but can he do what he did in the south of Johannesburg amongst those coloured amongst the coloured communities in the south of Johannesburg, Ennerdale, Rivoli, and can he do that on the Cape Flats? I know he's going to be very focused on it. He's made some inroads in the Western Cape, so that would be the DA's main concern. Just very quickly on Etakwini. This is, and wow, we're speaking about KwaZulu-Natal a lot, which I love doing. When we think of KwaZulu-Natal, it's got two main reservoirs of votes. It's Durban, Etakwini, and then the Imsunduzi, Peter Maritzburg area, which is part of the Umgungundluvu district, the KwaZulu-Natal Midlands.
Yeah.
The ANC has been killing it in the last few by-elections in 2023. The ANC is having a very tough time in by-elections in KwaZulu-Natal. But towards the end of the year, they have been showing some growth. And this is something which I'm going to watch greatly, because if the ANC can hold on to its support in Etakwini, it might be able to defy the odds in KwaZulu-Natal.
Okay, so who are their main opposition in KZN?
Great question. So we could have done a four-hour show in KwaZulu-Natal. It's a fascinating province. When we think of KwaZulu-Natal, I just spoke about Etakwini and the Umgungundluvu district, the Midlands. Then we go to the northern KwaZulu-Natal area, large towns like Richards Bay and Newcastle, but also traditional IFP places like Ulundi. Mm-hmm. So that the IFP won another by-election off the ANC Northern KwaZulu-Natal in the last round of by-elections for the year. It's a very impressive result. When I look at these results, I don't just look at the overall result. I drill down voting district levels. There's a lot for the IFP to be enthusiastic about.
Okay.
When it comes to but Gareth, what's key, and I alluded to the beginning of the show, Southern KwaZulu-Natal, Port Shepstone, onward all the way to the Eastern Cape border, places like Umzimkulu. These are rock-solid ANC areas, places, parts of the country where Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma hails from. This was, and I've said this many times and written this many times, this was, whatever you may think of Jacob Zuma, whatever those people, ANC supporters who are watching us or listening to us, the one thing they can must categorically give Jacob Zuma credit for is Southern KwaZulu-Natal. He turned this into one of the safest ANC areas in the country. The returns in 2009 and 2014 in Southern KwaZulu-Natal in the Harry Gwala district and the Ugu district, that in many instances was the same as returns in rural Limpopo, rural Mpumalanga and rural Eastern Cape. Okay. That is going to be key with the emergence of Jacob Zuma. So the big opponents, to just answer your question, are the IFP. You have Chris Pappas from the DA, who I think can energize metro voters. And let's see Jacob Zuma's party. And of course, can the EFF? The EFF have had a terrible 2023 in KwaZulu-Natal, but can Julius Malema find form? So that's what the ANC would be worried about in KwaZulu-Natal.
I was going to say,
Go ahead, because I've kind of dominated this and you haven't had a chance. You go for it.
I was going to say, in terms of polling, right, how accurate is our polling results? Because the DA also, like, we have been projecting like wins over the ANC in certain districts, like they've been leading the polls. That's my first question.
Yeah, I want to drink what those DA pollsters are drinking. I think it's very unlikely. Look, I think often the media writes off the DA too easily. The DA previous iteration, the DP, has been the official opposition now for many elections. I'd be very surprised if they don't return as the official opposition. But there's no opinion poll. Again, when someone gives an opinion or gives a projection, one's got to take a step back. The DA's best ever election result was under Musi Maimane in 2016. And there was all the stars aligned for the DA in that election. Jacob Zuma was very unpopular. Opposition was we're seeing a lot of fragmentation in our politics, but the opposition then was very weak. And a lot of that just fell into the support of the DA on election day. The DA also started attracting middle-class black voters in Gauteng. The DA swept the minority votes, English-speaking, white, Afrikaans-speaking, urban coloured vote, the Indian vote. The rural coloured vote is a bit of a competition. We can't say today, besides bar for the Indian community and amongst the English-speaking white community, that the DA has the same grasp over those communities or groups I just mentioned. So I think it's unlikely, Bakabantu.
So this is my second question, is what do we do about, like, because every time I have read like a result of an election, we have failed to create these new voters. Like, you speak of this voting block that Zuma created basically from South KZN up until like rural Eastern Cape, Bizana, Kokstad, all those places. I know those places. Those places shine green with black and yellow. So what about, because what you're talking about, the Democratic Alliance votes, those people that they converted during Musi Maimane's era fell down to the FF plus. They fell down, like, even now, Zuma fragmenting from the ANC, that takes away from these main voters. And I've never seen a political party convert those people into new voting power, like a new voting bloc.
It's a great point. So I think, if I may, also first-time voters, we've seen a lot of initiatives, a lot of money, smart business people putting in money into voter registration campaigns. We're still waiting for the full data to emerge from the first registration weekend. And this is important, very important statement I'm about to make, online voter registration for the entirety of 2023. But it seems like we haven't shot the lights out voter registrations, which concerns me. And that's a conversation for another time. What does it mean for our democracy if less young people, less people participate in the elections? So, and that goes back to your point. I think it's easier to find. So first of all, you have to find voters who are registered. It's one thing saying, let me go off on another quick tangent. The EFF have done very well in SRC election campaigns, student representative county election campaigns. But are we comparing apples with apples? In those SRC election campaigns, Bakabantu, you go online on your online portal at your university, put in your student card number, you don't have to show an ID, and you vote. And then you go back to drinking your beer or your cup of tea, whatever you're doing. It's very quick, painless, and simple. No having to find transport to go to a polling station. When we vote, we need an ID book, we need to be registered, and we need to show up at the polling station we are registered to. Much, much harder. And that's why it's vital. So again, when I think of this, and I think it's relative to what you're saying, if we think back to Brexit and the vote on Brexit, the genius there was that the Leave campaign were able to find voters who hadn't voted for a very long time, who had sat elections out. Can a new political party, can an existing political party go and find those millions of South Africans who say, we no longer vote because we do not believe our ballot can make a difference in this particular election? And I think it's easier said than done. I think there's a lot of despair out there, and I really hope that we are not going to see our lowest ever turnout in a national election this time around.
I actually believe it's a fallacy that the EFF has done good in SRC politics. I famously participated in an SRC election year, 2016, Witwatersrand. So there, the EFF got the vote, right, by winning 60% of the people that voted, and we only found out that the people that voted were 40% of the university. As much as to speak to a democracy, we would say the people that participate in a democracy, their vote counts. But that was not a true representation of them winning anything. But yeah, but move, and they couldn't even get 100% or 40% of the university. But that's like, but now when we speak to places like the Multi-Party Forum or the Moonshot Pact, like, does that move the needle for certain people? That, like, when you look at like political and like when you're analyzing the political system in South Africa, does that do something for South Africans?
Yeah, so I was quite critical of the multi-party charter when it started, because just to remind the listeners and the viewers, you're not going to be voting for the multi-party charter. You're going to be voting for a party in the multi-party charter. But what does the multi-party charter do? It's able to say, look, together we are bigger than what the DA got in 2016, considerably bigger by about 6 or 7, as a starting point, 6 or 7 percentage points. It also tells donors, look, we, and donors are key in this election. And I don't just look at donors as nefarious actors. I think a lot of donors, whoever they're giving money to, often have the intentions of the country at heart. And so this is key. I think it galvanizes donors to say, look, together we can bring parties together. We can work with the parties. And this is an idea, even if we don't unseat the ANC nationally, that the ANC potentially gets unseated in KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, and the Western Cape remains in the DA's hands, or the DA in another multi-party charter party's hands. So I think that's – but what the multi-party charter will need, I believe, and this is easier said than done. This is what we saw the – challenge with Roger Jardine, is I think if it has a candidate, a person who there is an agreement on, and it's, I understand what the smaller parties are saying. They're saying, how can we agree on a candidate before the election is done? That's a very valid point. But if it can have a big name behind it, I think it can gain a few percentage points. And by gaining a few percentage points, it'll gain a few more rands, and it could be a virtuous cycle. And it also shows a kind of maturity, yes.
Sorry, you bring up Roger Jardine, and you're talking about we need powerful politicians and important characters and people who can really galvanize support. I haven't heard anyone say horrible things about Roger Jardine. I don't really know that much about the guy myself. I had to look him up. First of all, I wasn't even sure what he looked like. And as much as he seems like a good guy, and I honestly haven't heard anything negative about the man, is he a person who will galvanize support? Is he a well enough known quantity, or is he just a hero of the business community who are going to try and foist this guy on us as a kind of, you know, like, almost like the way that the DA tried to window dress themselves with Musi Maimane and it all fell apart. Is that what's going to happen here?
Yeah, or Mampela Rampele was another example.
Exactly.
I think the Roger Jardine, and again, we've had the launch now. I spoke about it earlier. I thought it was a terrible time to launch a political party on a Sunday in December. I think it's fallen flat very quickly. I like being proven wrong. So I don't think Roger Jardine was the silver bullet to take the opposition parties and the multi-party charter up by a few percentage points. And I wonder if that person exists right now, Gareth. Just one thing, and this is a bit of a facile, a weakish comment, but basically we've seen there's this whole idea of politicians and hair. And just if I had to give some advice, what South Africans had known about Roger Jardine was that he had this incredible moustache. And when he launched the political party, the moustache was gone. So I don't know what that – so South Africans, is this Roger Jardine? So they really didn't know it was Roger. Those who didn't know him really didn't know it was him the day he launched the party, because that moustache, which he's been associated for many years, was gone. So that was – whoever gave him that advice gave him poor advice.
Terrible. And these things matter, right? I mean, politics, a lot of it is performative and a lot of it is posturing. And I don't know that someone who's in business necessarily knows how to do that stuff, because while business includes a lot of politics, politics includes a whole lot more than business.
100%. And Gareth, one of the things I do is when I go to events, I monitor politicians and I call it the selfie test. So I was at a national day of a, and look, this is a pretty elite setting, but their waiters, staff, etc. There are a lot of people attend these events. And I noticed at the 4th of July celebration this year of the United States, at the United States Embassy, Gaten McKenzie, people were queuing to have their selfies with him. And he was standing next to some pretty prominent politicians. Another one was Chris Pappas recently. I was at an event, and there were other prominent politicians near him. People were running up to Chris Pappas to get their photo taken with him. I don't think people, wherever Roger Jardine, and I hope he's having a, I hope all politicians put their feet up a bit, because they're going to have to hit the ground running early 2024. I don't think people this morning are going to be running up to Roger Jardine to have their selfie taken. So again, I don't think to reinforce the point that he is the silver bullet for the opposition project.
Okay, so let's talk about other opposition people here. Herman Mashaba, you mentioned Bantu Holomisa earlier. There's still COPE, believe it or not. There's still a COPE. I don't know who's in it. I don't know what they do, but there's still a COPE. Mangosuthu Buthelezi has exited stage left, and now the IFP, we're not even sure what's going on there. Are these other rats and mice parties worth paying attention to?
Yeah, the IFP is certainly a party worth paying attention to. Bar up until the last few rounds of by-elections, I think they were the overperformers of the year. And again, that's focus. I spoke about focus earlier. Mm-hmm. And look, I understand the reverence. Gareth, I was once on television speaking about commending the IFP and its new leader, Velenkosini Hlabisa. And I was saying it's amazing that this was before President, the founder Buthelezi passed away. Said it's amazing that the party is thriving. People said the IFP had fallen apart under their new leader. And they said, they chastised me. No, Buthelezi is still in control of the IFP. So can the IFP stay together? Can they build up? Yes, I understand the reverence that Buthelezi is literally the Nihlabisa. You've got a teacher, you've got a guy who I think is eloquent, I think can connect to the base. He comes from very rural northern KwaZulu-Natal. Can the IFP have the vision to carry on building his brand and get more voters, maybe younger voters who were not willing to vote for the IFP in the past, who might be willing to vote for them this time? Look, I think Herman Mashaba in 2021, to talk about Action SA, he controlled much of his own lane. This was the lane for those black professionals who voted for the DA in 2021 and ANC, lower middle class to middle class black voters who were upset with the ANC. And he he had very little entrance in that lane. You've seen since then that Songezo Zibi and Musi Maimane have entered the fray. You have seen that, as I said, there's the DA, which seems to be more disciplined now. I think they'll battle to win back those black voters who voted for the DA in 2016. But some of those white voters who vote for Action SA might come back to the DA. So I think Mashaba was in a stronger position in 2021 than he is today. But having said that, I think Action SA is more established than Rise Mzansi, more established than Build One South Africa. And look, the media really got behind Mashaba in 2021. I think it's going to be harder in 2024. But I think if he remains focused on more of the urban provinces, certainly Gauteng, certainly Johannesburg, there are good signs for him in Soweto, in some Soweto by-elections. Mashaba can definitely be a factor in this election. Then just with Bantu Holomisa, Gareth, I've said the word focus, and we can do the tally with the producers after the show many times this show. What always mystifies me is we know that the United Democratic Movement have historically done best in the Mthatha Butterworth area.
In the former Transkei. Yes,
so I would say go where your voters are. Go where your voters are. And you'll see Bantu Holomisa campaigning in Cape Town and Johannesburg and Durban. Instead of, if I was him giving advice, I would literally spend 95% of my time in those communities which voted for you impressively in that local government elections. Was it 2000, I think it was, when he ran for the first time. So that is what I would advise Holomisa. Otherwise, he's going to continue to be a reduced factor. If he's not focused, UDM and COPE might look. It's very hard to disappear because you only need need less than 0.25% to make it back. But it'll be a very tough time for them.
Can I just ask quickly? On you brought up the media just a second ago, and the media has this habit of I'm not going to speak on behalf of the media, but we have this double standard in South Africa where we have extraordinary depths of understanding and levels of criticism, which we deploy against the DA, for example. But there's a kid glove treatment so often with the ANC because, I don't know, maybe because they're the biggest player in the economy and maybe because the media isn't as independent as the media pretends to be. But when it comes to like backing horses, a lot of our media institutions and publications have done a terrible job over the last 10 elections. They've got it wrong almost every single time. And yet they don't seem to pay a price for that lack of ability to valuably ascertain what the next election might bring for us. They don't seem to lose credibility in I don't know, audience numbers, sales figures, publication. It seems to me that they don't pay a price for how useless they are when it comes to the elections, or am I being especially unkind because we're in the media?
Well, I think we're seeing I spoke about that ANC in 1999-2004 just dominated so many aspects of our society. I think you're seeing the media, there's not going to be no rumor for it. I'd be very surprised unless this idea of an ANC-EFF doomsday coalition. I do not see the media batting for Ramaphosa this time round. It's going to be interesting to see who the media gets behind. I think there's a lot of energy behind someone like Songezo Zibi. I don't think Songezo Zibi at this time is going to shoot the lights out in this election. So it'll be interesting to see whether the media continues on the Songezo Zibi train. I think he's a great guy, a smart guy. But I think you're correct. The media needs to take a step back. It's the same. We spoke earlier about the Brexit analogy. It was so clear that the media was out of touch with large swaths of South Africa, of the United Kingdom. The media needs to be sure to not to understand that this time might be very much different. But equally, Gareth, and let me contradict myself, understanding South Africa also means understanding those deep rural areas which remain intensely loyal to the ANC. But I don't think we're going to see another bout of Ramaphosa this time around.
Okay. I think we've covered quite a lot of ground here, but one other last thing, the election itself. Do you think, because we had the IEC's deputy chief electoral officer on the show in our first episode of Democracy 101, we had Balian Tuli last week, who is very, very interesting. But the IEC, are they on top of things? Is it going to be a free and fair election? Should we worry about how independent the IEC is?
Yeah, look, as you know, I deal a lot with data and analysis, and I look at priors. The elections have been ostensibly free and fair, and I think it will be this time around. Time is not on our side. Remember that, and I'm sure Mbali spoke about it, or the IC spoke about it much better than I can. The third ballot. So it's a different animal this time around. The election is going to be slightly different to previous elections, but we have to be hopeful that political parties be vigilant against fraud, that they'll hold the IC to account. That the IEC will hold political parties to account. When we've seen the ANC or other parties lose power, there has 9.5 times out of 10 be a free transfer of power. We know on the local government elections that there have been hiccups, not just, by the way, I can give you ANC examples, IFP examples, DA examples, where it's been a long, frustrating handover of power. It hasn't been that swift, but largely, yeah. I have to be hopeful that elections are going to be free and fair, that Cliff Central are going to, and other media houses will play its part in ensuring that and holding those to account. It's going to be absolutely critical.
Okay, but you still you reserve some let's say you reserve a little bit of cautious optimism.
Yeah, I'm having a sleepless night about it. Yet, okay. Look, the IEC has to work against a very close timeline. Will people be trained correctly? So, I'll give you my biggest concern right now: are those zip machines. This can be a real bottleneck if the machines stop working. So you get large turnouts at a voting station, and you have this bottleneck where they can't check your barcoded ID or that piece of paper they give you. And then people just go away. There were scenes in our last local government elections. Would it have altered the result? In a very close municipality like Nelson Mandela Bay, maybe the ANC would have got an extra seat or the DA would have got an extra seat. There were people waiting in the lines long after closing time. So that's it. As long as the political parties hold the IC to account, I remain hopeful.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to throw in, Bakabantu, and then we'll wrap this up?
No. Mr. Sussman speaks on a lot of like focus, right? Focus by political parties. But I think also like voters should also think about focus. Focus on your neighborhood, focus on what you want from this election. I think we're past the whole point, but we need to know that this is a pivotal election. You need to know what you want from it, though, even though it's pivotal. You need to know what you want. What can someone like ActionXA speak to you? What does the EFF speak to you? What does the ANC speak to you? And then you vote according to those needs. I think that's a mindset that we all need to have. Focus, to reiterate your words.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's very sensible. Wayne, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate having a conversation with you. You certainly know what you're talking about. And I think we are entering a really, really exciting new phase for South Africa. No matter what happens in these elections, it's all of these parties are unsure of the ground that they're standing on. And that's a good thing. When politicians are unsure, the people can take some pleasure and some joy out of that, some reassurance maybe. So I think let's go into this with our eyes wide open. And as Bakabantu says, you've got to have some idea of what you want before you go to the polls and before you expect parties to make promises to you, hollow promises very often, about things they can't actually do. You've got to have very realistic expectations. Anything you want to add as closing remarks?
Just one last thing. I spoke about it being the festive season. Politicians and IEC officials, rest now, but do not rest on your laurels in 2024.
Very good. All right, Wayne, lovely to see you. Thank you very much. And thank you to you for joining us this morning on Democracy 101. We will continue this in the new year. This is our last Democracy 101 for 2023. And before you blink, before you open your eyes, it'll be a brand new year, an election year. And we've got lots of really important stuff to pay attention to going forward into that election year. Thanks, Bakabantu. Thank you very much to Wayne Sussman. Also, thank you to JJ Cornish earlier, but most especially to you for joining us. We will see you tomorrow for a not live, but I think pretty damn interesting show. So stick around for that and a bunch of other things on the Gareth Cliff Show. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, we've got Dan Mace, who is the guy who runs Mr. Beast's philanthropy channel and a guy who's an absolute whiz at getting millions and millions of hits on YouTube. You want to know how? You got to listen to that interview tomorrow. And then Red Hill School's Pioneering Center for Dialogue and Conflict Resolution, about a really, really smart way to get young people to have interesting debates and discussions. And LJ Fenter on Thursday as well, a must-listen exclusive, some amazing facts he's never brought up before about some of the things that he is very much paying attention to in the world and things that he's happy to talk about now because he reckons it's now or never. So he's spilling the beans. Take a listen to that. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody, on a not live, but still action-packed show. We'll be back for our last show Friday morning. Cheers. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.